Ed Bell with you. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Coming up on the program today, music contributor Chris DeAngelis speaks with singer-songwriter Mickey Carroll about his early days performing in Miami and his new CD, Old Dogs. Contributor Paul Leary talks with the legendary Liza Minnelli about her great career and her upcoming concert in Broward County. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and our Miami-Dade arts calendar features Deborah Margol. Now, the Coral Gables Museum is about much more than just its city. Consider Art Cycle and free jazz concerts every Wednesday at noon. Here's contributor Judith Bishop and her guest to elaborate.
When the moon shines in Coral Gables, I will hold you in my arms.
The Coral Gables Museum is an exercise in civic pride. Their mission is to spotlight and preserve the architecture, design, and careful city planning that's made Coral Gables one of the loveliest communities in the nation. The museum is housed in a classic Spanish building with a red roof tile, a courtyard, and Moorish arches. Originally, that building served as a police and fire station. Now it's been designated the official visitor center for the city of Coral Gables. Inside the museum, there's a video promoting the city. And a centerpiece of the collection is called Creating the Dream, a chronicle of Coral Gables founder George Merrick and his vision to build a city that reflects the beauty and character of Spain. Christine Rupp is the director of the Coral Gables Museum. Her focus has been and continues to be historic preservation. Ms. Rupp has served on the Miami-Dade Trust and the Merrick House Governing Board. She is our guest today. Christine Rupp, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat. Your connection with the Coral Gables Museum really was a labor of love. You were there from inception to reality. How hard was it to get it off the ground, and what kind of things did you encounter during that period?
Well, it's been very exciting, and thank you for having me. The idea to bring a museum to the city of Coral Gables started way back in the 1990s. It was the idea of then Commissioner Chip Withers. And through the years, a board was developed, a mission statement was developed, the construction started, and about midway through the design process, our wonderful architect, George Hernandez, said, you know what, we need to think about LEED certification. LEED is an acronym for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. George thought we would make a great example, an historically deemed building that's trying to be green. And so that was a surprise to all of us that we were going green, and it really has been fabulous. There aren't that many historically designated buildings in the country that are LEED certified. So sustainability is part of our mission and being green. So it's all fit in wonderfully.
You mentioned being green. There's two kinds of green. There's money green as well. And I was thinking that a few years ago, every time we interviewed someone in the arts during the depths of the recession, we always talked money. How hard were things? Now that the economy seems at least to be improving, is it a little bit easier for nonprofits and cultural institutions to
Judy,
forge
I will
ahead?
Say as a nonprofit, it's never easy. But we believe we opened in the heart of that economic downturn, and we're very viable. We're stronger than ever. We're gaining more attention than ever. So we believe the best is yet to come for the Coral Gables Museum if we've weathered that storm.
That's really fantastic. Now, after this long process and then becoming a green building and going through all of the hoops I'm sure you had to go through, how was it when the doors opened and there it was?
Well, we continue to pinch ourselves today, I can tell you. Back when we opened in 2011, we really had to make a mark because square footage-wise, we have one of the smallest facilities in South Florida. We also have a very small staff. So we knew we had to be aggressive with regard to exhibits and programming and getting our name out there. We had to present unique things that museums just weren't doing. And I did a bit of research on making our mark in the community. And it seemed that museums were moving really more toward putting an emphasis on programming, because it's great to put things on the wall, have things within that building that museum staff believes are wonderful. But unless you engage the public, get them in that door and introduce them to the museum, it's really sort of all for naught. I mean, you're always going to have some people trickle in the door. So programming is key. And I believe our museum staff has come up with some really unique ways to engage the public with our museum exhibits and all of our activities.
What kind of programs do you have to get them in the door?
Well, part of our focus, of course, of being green gives us the ability to do a lot of creative programming. And something we're very proud of is our monthly bike tours. We've partnered with a new organization in Coral Gables called Bike Walk Coral Gables. We present monthly bike tours. We meet at the museum the third Sunday of every month, and we ride around Coral Gables for about an hour and a half. Sometimes we extend our focus, like when we had the Marine Stadium exhibit, we actually biked the basin around the Marine Stadium, and we rode the bike trails on Virginia Key. So whenever we do a bike tour, it's focused on an exhibition that's at the museum. Gables architecture, Gables history, new construction in Coral Gables, and the Gables tree canopy. So they have become very popular. On any given Sunday, we normally have 50 to 60 people joining us for the bike tour.
You're also going to have an upcoming exhibition called Art Cycle. What is that one all about?
Art Cycle is a beautiful idea born from two artists who had a friend who was killed on the Rickenbacker Causeway. I'm sure you're familiar with that accident a couple years ago. So they're artists in the Miami community, and they engaged their fellow artists to create art objects out of discarded bicycles. These bicycles previewed during Art Basel in different galleries around Wynwood, and then we're putting them all together for this exhibition that opens on January 23rd. The programming around Art Cycle obviously includes a bike tour, and then we're bringing in some bike professionals from the county who are going to discuss the bike plan, bike safety, and things that bikers can look forward to in South Florida. Let's face it, it's the best climate anywhere for biking, and there should be a lot more bikes on the road today.
And it's flat. I love to bike at
Absolutely.
Sea level. Your background is in historic preservation, and I know you have a keen interest in architecture, and that's another exhibition that's coming up in conjunction with a well-known architectural critic here in South Florida, Beth Dunlap. When does that open, and what can we expect to see?
Beth's exhibition opens in March and runs through June. It's called Marking the Millennium. So this is, again, another effort to let people know that we're not just about Coral Gables and we're not just about history. I've heard people refer to us as the Coral Gables History Museum, the Coral Gables Art Museum. We simply are the Coral Gables Museum with a focus on architecture, urban design and planning, and sustainability and preservation. So we thought, working with Beth, we could bring in an exhibition that focused on recent Miami architecture. So Beth is choosing her favorite buildings that have been constructed in Miami over the last 10 years. Not residential, they're all commercial and public buildings. So we'll feature wonderful photographs done by noted architectural photographer Robin Hill. We also will have models and film within the exhibition itself, so we're very excited.
I think a top 10 list is pretty intriguing. Can you leak a few of the buildings that we can look forward to learning more about?
Of course. There are a few obvious choices. PAM, the new art museum, is wonderful. Marlin Stadium, which is a very unique structure. New World Symphony and the Adrian Arts Center are a few. We do have more than 10, I have to say, because knowing, you know, Beth kept adding to the list. So the exhibit's going to be great.
It sounds it. It sounds it. And it's also a great reminder of the explosion that we've seen here in Greater Miami in the last few years. Lots of architectural and landscape changes.
Actually, that's the reason for the whole exhibit, because we sat down to the initially had the discussion, and I remember a quote somewhere that at one time, Miami, it was only beaten by Dubai as far as the number of construction cranes in the sky.
Well, I have to tell you, one day I was stuck at a red light, and I counted 17 in my peripheral vision.
I believe it.
That is a boom. Looking further down the road, what are you anticipating for the summer and the next year or so?
Well, we try to plan our exhibitions a year in advance because we have such a small staff. We have to be as organized as possible to pull these things off. So this summer, we're working with the Brazilian Cultural Office here in Miami to present an exhibition about the World Cup stadiums that are being constructed in Brazil for, obviously, the World Championship. So there are 12 stadiums in 12 cities. We're highlighting those stadiums because The majority of them are also green and have a huge cultural and monetary impact on their communities. So we'll have models, we'll have diagrams, we'll have information about all the host cities. And the most fun thing is that we're going to turn our museum plaza into a soccer field complete with AstroTurf. So during lunchtime, people can come over and kick around a few soccer balls.
Sounds like innovation is the key to your work there. Christine Rupp, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with the Coral Gables Museum.
My pleasure, Judy.
The Coral Gables Museum is located at 285 Aragon Avenue. The museum is open Monday through Friday from noon to 6, Saturdays 11 to 5, and Sundays 12 noon to 5 p.m. For more information, log on to coralgablesmuseum.org or telephone 305-603-8067. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will return in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up, the legend Liza Minnelli speaks with contributor Paul Leary, chef Norman Van Aken, and our Miami-Dade Arts Calendar with Deborah Margol wrap up the show. Now, music contributor Chris DeAngelis offers up Miami musical history with his guest, singer-songwriter Mickey Carroll.
People love life. Everybody wants a piece of the pie.
Mickey Carroll's education as a songwriter and entertainer began at a young age. Growing up in New Jersey during the early 1950s, Mickey was witness to a time when pop music was in a state of transition to performers who foreshadowed what would later become known as rock music. Guys like Louis Prima, Red Prysock, and Louis Jordan were playing a wild, high-energy type of music which had little to do with the big band music of the previous generation. While in high school, Mickey was a dancer on the television show that would prove to be the crest of the wave breaking the new music to a wider audience, American Bandstand. In 1957, he formed the doo-wop musical duo Billy and Mickey. Billy and Mickey played clubs throughout the Northeast and appeared at record hops, concerts, and dances alongside teen idols like Fabian and Frankie Avalon. The duo had a regional hit in 1958 entitled You Are, which charted primarily on black radio stations. Now, this was during the very earliest days of rock and roll, long before the breakdown of segregation, so it was really something quite extraordinary for a couple of white teenagers to perform to and be accepted by black audiences. Later, he relocated to Miami and continued to hone his talent as a guitarist and singer during the heyday of the early 60s South Florida hotel nightclub scene. Then he was off to New Orleans, where he got really serious about learning his instrument, absorbing all he could from the city's musical community, who were happy to share their knowledge with the young kid who was eager to learn. By the early 1970s, back in South Florida, he was performing his own original material. One night in 1974, while gigging at the Hideaway in Hollywood Beach, he got what would prove to be a huge break in his career as a songwriter when he was discovered by Don Cornelius, the founder and host of the Soul Train television show. Cornelius and his business partner, Dick Griffey, took Mickey from Hollywood, Florida to Hollywood, California, and set the wheels into motion. The result was a new management contract, an album for RCA Records recorded with an all-star cast of musicians, and the connections for Carroll to finally begin profiting from his songwriting talent. His second LP, Love Life, recorded at Bayshore Recording Studio in Coconut Grove during 1977, was nominated for a Grammy. He received a gold record for his song Love Is Where You Find It, the title cut and hit single for the best-selling LP by The Whispers. Love Is Where You Find It went to number one on the R&B charts in 1982. Always on the search for fertile musical ground, Carroll lived in Nashville for a while, where his talents as a songwriter broadened even further. Mickey Carroll's songs have been recorded by a wide and strange variety of performers. John Mayall, Dion, the Soul Train Gang, The Whispers, Frankie Beverly and Maze, Steve Villamo, even the Muppets. Regardless of where you are and who you hear performing it, whenever you hear a Mickey Carroll song, you will hear something genuine. Perhaps this is the quality which has sustained his career for over five decades. We spoke with him a little while ago about his time in South Florida and his most recent recording, a CD entitled Old Dogs. Mickey Carroll, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be with you guys.
Mickey, your roots go pretty deep here in South Florida. When did you first come down here and what were you doing?
Oh, my gosh. We're going way back, Dale. I arrived in Florida from South Jersey. I was up there recording a doo-wop with a fellow named Billy and Mickey. Then I moved to Florida, and at that point, I got involved in as much as I could because I was still a kid ready to go. You know what I mean?
Now, see, you played in a Hammond organ trio for a while down here.
Oh, yeah. Geez, you did your homework. I had a group called The Counts, and that was a Hammond organ, drum, myself on guitar trio. And we worked all the joints in Miami and traveled all the way out to New Orleans and stayed in New Orleans for quite a while. I was a ham bone. I stepped out front and did all the front work.
Where were you working here in South Florida with that group?
Okay, if you can remember these clubs, Tony's, which was in, it would be South Miami there, and the 500 Club, which was a fellow actually named Jerry Lewis that owned it. That was on 36th Street. There was a club there. It was a joint that I lived in, played in, ate in, had a restaurant and a hotel. It was like upstairs. It was kind of like a flop house, kind of.
So this is the early 60s? Late
50s?
Yeah,
that's right. It was, yes. That would be 36th Street and 2nd Avenue, and that was called the Smith Brothers Lounge. And across the street from that was the James Club. And those two clubs were like right next to one another, and there was jamming going on around the 24/7.
Now, were you going over to the Sir John and listening to music at that time?
Oh, yeah, buddy. Yes, sir. If you wanted to hear something really good, that's where you had to go. That or the Hampton Inn.
Did you relocate to New Orleans, or did you just spend a little time there?
Well, I went to New Orleans and fell in love with the way they play there. And I did everything I could. I stayed there as long as I could to learn how to play a little more on my axe. And I was there 2.5 years. I actually lived on Bourbon Street. You want to believe that?
Wow.
The club owner liked me, and he gave me a room upstairs over where I was working. It was called the Gunga Din.
Now, your CD, Old Dogs, it definitely has got that New Orleans vibe to it. What do you think you took out of that city? What did that city give to you?
It gave me some, it helped me find myself. How's that? I don't want to put it above any other place, but at the same time, I want to say that if you want to learn about gospel, soul, and blues, at the time I was there, it was perfect.
Were you in South Florida during the folk music boom?
Yeah, I was in Florida most of the time. Other than, you know, Philly was my teenage years when I was singing out there, doing little record hops and things. Miami, I was there for quite a few years, and then I went to New Orleans, and I came about 2.5 years in New Orleans. I was right back to Miami because I could work in Miami. And I got lucky because the owner of the Cotton Club in Harlem, the original Cotton Club, Herman Stark, and his son Steve, managed me for a while and kept me working all over Miami Beach. And that's when I actually started making a few bucks.
So you were working with the hotel lounges? Or?
Yeah, I worked them all, man.
Fontainebleau and the Eden Rock? And
everything imaginable to man. I worked it there on Miami Beach.
Your album has a real live feel to it. What was your approach to recording the record?
Oh, Chris, I'm glad you asked that question because I love to record live because it's an impulsive thing. It's something that happens. The magic can happen and with musicians that feel that energy together and they get one pass at what comes to the table and there's something really special that happens with a live recording. And I wish it would come back.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a wonderful time we had recording that. That's Howard Albert, and he put his back into that. And Howard was one of the guys that ran Criteria down there for Mac Immerman. And his brother Ron, they're just famous. I mean, they've worked on a lot of Atlantic stuff, Aretha Franklin, James Brown. They worked on a lot of stuff.
So you're in good hands.
Oh, God, yeah. Actually, the guy upstairs took care of me there.
No,
they were, like, sent to me, you know?
I've noticed that one of our favorite local saxophonists is all over this album, Joe Donato. Tell us about your friendship with him.
Well, I'm sorry to talk over you, buddy. But Joe was a special guy. He's from Vineland, South Jersey, and I lived outside of Camden there. I was in Camden County. And we're both from the same turf. We played Atlantic City when we were kids. You want to believe this? And him and I have worked together before, not all the time. He was much busier than me at one point in time. I was doing clubs and he was doing clubs, but the club date thing started happening and he really caught on to that too. So, and I would have worked with him more because I love this guy. I thought he was wonderful. And I'm so glad he's on my CD.
Now, well, let's say a lot of people have done your songs. I have to ask you, where did you meet Dion DiMucci?
Well, it was a brief encounter. He liked one of my songs, and it was on the phone. He wanted to do Miss Liberty, which Steve Alamo recorded, and I told him that Steve was doing it, and he.
So, speaking of Steve Alamo, let's talk about him. Local record A&R man, producer, singer, basically brought disco music to the world. Tell us about your relationship with him.
Well, it's been off and on for many years. We've always known each other, and we've always done things similar. He's basically an R&B artist. I felt as though he was probably one of the most talented entertainer, artist-type singers that Miami produced, believe it or not. I don't know if everybody knows that, but my God, he put on an incredible show. Kind of like Wayne Cochran a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Back in those days, he could dance. He was pretty. And I was jealous.
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about 1974 and Don Cornelius.
Oh, that was some experience there, Chris. That was an amazing thing. I was working in Hollywood at a place called The Hideaway. It was right on the beach. And he came into the club along with Dick Griffey, who was in the black entertainment field. He was one of the big dogs. And so they heard me play, and they wanted me to record on Solar, which was a label that belonged to Griffey and Cornelius. Soul Trade Records as well was merged with that from the TV show, and off we went. We recorded the first LP live at sea on a 110-foot ship, and they moved an entire studio onto the ship.
You had a great bunch of musicians. I had Chuck Lavelle played on that.
Everybody in the world. Everybody was on it. That was Leon Pendarvis, who was Saturday Night Live's entertainment director. And, Willie Hall, one of the Blues Brothers, played the drums. Tim Drummond, who was working with Bob Dylan at the time, and God knows who. There's no end to these guys. And Chuck Lavelle, by the way, was super talented, easy to deal with, and played. Oh, he did play good.
Now, which album resulted in the Grammy nomination? Was it that album or a later one?
Love Life was nominated because it was a wonderful little sound. I don't know if you know Eric Schilling from down there. He worked very close with all the Latin hits that came out of there, Gloria Estefan and just a multitude of other people. He engineered that, and man, did he do some job. And I think that's helped us get some attention. That was Bill Simzik's studio, and it was in Coconut Grove.
You've been very involved in community service. Tell us a little bit about your causes, because I know you're not just a guy that writes songs.
You're a sweet guy. That's what I think music's all about. It's relative to compassion. I think compassion is the most powerful force in the universe. So I try to write tunes that are like Love Is Where You Find It, I wrote for them, and Healing, as I wrote that for Dion. And you can tell by the titles, People Love Life and all that, that's what I'm trying to reach for. And that, in regard to humanity, I try to get out there and help different causes. Right now, I'm particularly fond of the Head Start program, which seems to be struggling a little bit because of funding. So I'm supporting that with this next concert that I have coming up in March.
Mickey Carroll, thank you very much for being on South Florida Arts Beat.
Oh, Chris, you've been a good guy. And you know what? I enjoy talking about this business and all the years, and it's treated me wonderfully. And I'm very pleased and happy that guys like you are there for me to share that with.
Well, thank you, Mickey.
Thank you, buddy.
At the age of 72, Mickey Carroll is undoubtedly an old dog, and his latest CD bears all the wrinkles, scars, and wisdom an old dog accumulates over a lifetime. You won't hear any new tricks on this album, but you will hear the stories, sounds, and rhythms of all the places he has lived and grown. New Orleans, Philly, Nashville, New Jersey, and even our very own South Florida. For more information, go online to olddogsmickeycarroll.com or mickeycarroll.com. This is Chris DeAngelis for South Florida Arts Beat.
Chris DeAngelis is a songwriter and musician who has performed throughout the state over the past 20 years in many musical genres. You can email him at molemachine1@yahoo.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment.
Come on over here and snuggle up with me, baby. Yeah.
It's South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN. A very good afternoon to you. The time is 1:30. And we're funded by listeners like you and by Kaiser University. For more than 35 years, Kaiser has been committed to helping students succeed. Kaiser is now accepting applications for their master's degree as a family nurse practitioner. More information available at kugradschool.com.
Calling all companies. Registration is now open for the 2014 Mercedes-Benz Corporate Run. This annual event promotes camaraderie, team spirit, and company morale. All companies, large or small, know that a healthy employee makes for a healthy company. So you should spread the word that fitness can be fun and sign up today. In West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, and downtown Miami, your first step towards fitness can be the Mercedes-Benz Corporate Run. Details at teamfootworks.org or 305-666-RACE.
It was a scandalous masterpiece that changed music forever. Now you can hear Franz Welser-Most and the Cleveland Orchestra perform Stravinsky's infamous The Rite of Spring live in concert. The Cleveland Orchestra performs The Rite of Spring January 31st and February 1st at the Arts Center. Tickets at artscenter.org.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. It's such an honor for the show to feature a winner of 4 Tony Awards, an Oscar, a Legends Grammy, 2 Golden Globes, and an Emmy. That describes the legend herself, Liza Minnelli. Here's our contributor, Paul Leary.
Liza Minnelli, thanks for joining us here on South Florida Arts Beat. It is an absolute pleasure to have you.
Oh, sweet Paul, thank you so much.
I can't tell you how excited I am to be able to ask you a few questions about your South Florida appearance. You're going to be at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts February 16th.
Yes.
And I want to hear about what's going on in the show in this tour.
Well, it's a new show. You haven't seen it.
Okay.
Let me put it that way. And it's fun. It's fun for the audience, it's fun for me, because it's a little more, how can I say, it's not so formal. There's more conversation between me and the audience, and I'm singing the songs that have been requested so much.
And what kind of requested songs? Can you give us a few hints?
Yeah, well, things that I haven't sung in a while, like Ring Them Bells.
Oh, great.
And Harvest Moon.
Excellent.
Aw, thanks, and a few others.
You know, it's funny because I was going to ask if you were going to do some of the favorites, and I got a few questions from online people, and that was one of the
really?
Questions. What, are you doing some of the old favorites that maybe you hadn't done in a long time?
Yes.
Is there a name for this tour?
No, not at all. Just, hi, I'm here.
And, you know, I was on online. I saw you were performing with your sister, Lorna Luff, not too long ago in New York.
Well, that was just one song, and it was her show.
Yeah.
That she put together with a whole bunch of people that she knows who are wonderful talents who have had breast cancer the way that she has had it.
Yeah.
And I just helped her introduce it.
And also recently we saw that you were a big supporter of the Dallas Buyers Club film with Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto winning Golden Globes.
Oh, absolutely. God, I love that movie.
Wasn't that a fantastic film? Strong performance.
Just fantastic.
And is it true
really
that...
Really wonderful.
Is it true that you said that if Matthew McConaughey doesn't get an Oscar, you're going to give him yours?
Yeah, it's true. true. I said it. I don't know why. No, I said it. We'll see.
You know, here in South Florida, we're so lucky because I would say myself over the last 10 years or so, you have brought your show through the area several times. So we're lucky to have you down here. Is there something about South Florida that you like besides the sun that brings you down here every few years?
Yes, I have friends down there. And like you said, I love the weather and the atmosphere. And I just think it's lovely.
Everybody knows, of course, the iconic film Cabaret, which was the Oscar-winning performance for Liza Minnelli. But I didn't know in 1995 that they selected the Library of Congress to preserve this film in the National Film Registry. That's quite an honor.
No, isn't that something?
Quite an honor.
Well, I mean, you know, Bob Fosse deserves it. He was a brilliant director, and he had an eye like no one.
And also, they have restored it here in Miami at one of our cinemas, one of our art houses. They're showing it on the big screen. Cabaret is on the big screen. They restored it. Why do you think why do you think this movie has such staying power?
Because it's really good.
Some have said it's one of the best musicals ever made, period.
Well, it also stands, it's the truth in that, you know, people don't go singing a lot outside of the cabaret. They sing, yes, once in the garden, the Beer Garden.
Oh,
but
right.
That's like a song about Nazis, right?
Right.
The anthem.
Right. It wasn't a traditional musical where it took place outside of the stage. Most, if not all of the songs, except the one you just mentioned, were on the stage in the cabaret in the film.
Yes, indeed. And it was so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that set that was built and working with Joel. I'm telling you, the whole cast was fun to work with. And we all respected each other and really loved each other. And they sent us off to Germany to do a film about singing Nazis. Come on.
I'm with you.
You know, I said, all right.
Did you know that it was going to be much different than the stage version of the musical?
Yes, I did.
Because a lot of the songs were cut in order to, I guess, it was really more than a musical. It was a dramatic film in a lot of ways.
Oh, it was very dramatic, but it had all the, it's a real musical, but it's also a real story. So when the music comes in, it's usually on the nose. You know, it's pointing something out or it's preparing you for something that's going to happen or
now,
whatever. But that was fun.
Are you bringing Cabaret into this South Florida appearance?
Sure.
I've seen you so many times, you have to do Cabaret.
Oh, yeah, and maybe this time, too.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Thank you.
What about your appearances on TV? You know, you're opening up to so many different audiences over the years. You were on Smash not too long ago and even had great raves for Arrested Development. How does that make you feel to have new audiences?
Oh, terrific. Just wonderful. If the work is good and you're working with good people and people like it, you couldn't be more pleased. That's what you're working for.
Yeah. You know, another great South Florida guy, Johnny Rogers, who's been a friend here on this show.
Yeah.
He's been on South Florida Arts Beat performing live here in our radio station studios at WLRN. Can you tell us the story how you met Johnny Rogers?
I just think he's great. Johnny is great. And I met him because I saw him perform. And he was so good. I thought, wait a minute, this kid has something. So I talked to him. And I asked him if he wanted to play with me, you know, the piano, and also sing. And he said, yeah, sure. So we did shows. When Billy couldn't do them, we did them. Mm-hmm. And then when I did the Kay Thompson show,
yes,
I said, oh, we got to have this kid. He's just great. And he was.
And you mentioned the great Billy Stritch, who you've been touring with for a number of years as well, and been your musical director. It's always great when I see you guys in concert and Billy comes out and does some numbers with you. What a talent.
Oh, really? I know. It's just wonderful. And, you know, it's so much fun to be on the stage with a talented person.
You always surround yourself with the best talent.
Oh, thank you. I've learned to recognize it.
So people that are coming to your South Florida show, again, at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale, they're going to have a good time. You're going to tell some old stories, maybe some inside stories of your father, Vincent Minnelli, directing some movies when you were on... Well, I mean, like...
Well,
I remember you used to say, like, when you were on the set as a young person, little stories like that. You would tell stories about the behind the scenes of making this movie or that movie. He used to bring little costumes home for you.
Oh, yeah. That was all wonderful, but this is kind of a different show. It's all about this. One song really does lead to another. You know, there's a reason for singing, and that's that I love them, and they've been requested. Whenever I can tell stories, I do.
It's like Liza's greatest hits.
Liza's most requested hits.
Most requested hits. You have one of the things I always, when I'm at one of your live performances, the age range of your fan base is from young to old and back again and everything in between. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
No, isn't that wonderful?
I think it's fantastic that the people come out. What do you count that there are so many different demographics for Liza Minnelli? Why do you think that is?
I guess because I was trained as an entertainer through Broadway, and I always wanted to be an entertainer. So I think that it's interesting. And then I went to Charles Aznavour, you know, the French singer.
Oh, sure.
Who was so wonderful, and I asked him if I could study with him, and he let me do that. So I asked the best people in the world if I could study with them.
And I guess something rubbed off.
Well, it's, you know, it's your job to learn if you're studying.
I guess you have to have the goods, though, to go with the teachers. You got to have the goods.
Yeah, somebody said that the other day. They said, well, you got to have the brains to ask.
So we're talking about Liza Minnelli bringing her show to South Florida. She's going to be singing some of her most requested songs, a lot of things that she hasn't done in a number of years.
And some would surprise you. I mean, some aren't big hits. I mean, you'll get a kick out of it, I think.
You mean there's some that people really have appreciated over the years, but maybe necessarily something you aren't known for, perhaps, like the Cabaret and maybe This Time in New York,
York.
I mean, some of those will be in there, too.
Of course.
You have been here a number of times over the years, and you have sort of a special connection with a lot of the different communities and things that you've stood up for over the years. You did a wonderful tribute the day after that many years ago that raised awareness and funds for AIDS. Can you talk a little bit about that work and what that means to you?
Well, I didn't know what else to do. And I thought when Fred Ebb and John Cantor had just written the show and the day after that was in it. And when this whole thing happened that was so awful and that I was so close to, I thought, what can I do? Yes, I can help Elizabeth, and yes, I can be part of that organization. And yes, I can, but it needs something else. And I thought of that song, and everybody was so excited to do it, and we did it at the United Nations building.
Oh, right, right.
Oh, really? It was really wonderful.
With a big chorus behind you.
Huge.
Yeah. And you directed the video for that. And, you know, the other thing about that video, the day after that and the song, you recorded it, I think, in French and in Spanish. And tell me if I'm wrong, was it Gloria Estefan that translated the lyrics for you?
Absolutely. And Charles Aznavour in French.
Did the French version, the day after that.
Well, people are dying, and they've forgotten some of the wonderful things that have been told to us. So you have to remind them.
That's true. Well, it has indeed been my absolute pleasure to have Liza Minnelli here on South Florida Arts Beat. We look forward to seeing you and your appearance here in Fort Lauderdale. Liza Minnelli, thank you so very, very much.
Oh, thank you, honey. Can't wait to see everybody.
Catch more theater on Paul Leary's website, BroadwayEdition.org, and you can contact him on Twitter at Paul Leary. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot, do, do, do. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is blood. I walked into our restaurant kitchen and inhaled an aroma I'd known before I knew its name. It was blood. It spiraled me back in time to the Peterson's grocery store where my mother shopped. She carried me in there before the age of 3 and slung me from hip to hip while she selected our food and put it in the cart. Though small, the store was pretty amazing for the time. They had a full butcher case that Mr. Peterson personally manned. He had a box of sawdust that he used to toss, like chicken feed, onto the wooden floors to sop up the blood that fell off his knives. A vibrant produce section lined one whole wall of the store. It relied on the area's farms and orchards. Though the fish choices were few, they were fresh Great Lakes fish. There was even a baked goods cabinet by the checkout area. Mrs. Peterson added in her own home-baked Greek specialties that lent a sense of exotica to the rural store in our town. We were up in farm country just 15 miles south of the Wisconsin border. It was close enough to a bigger town for my dad's auto business to be viable, but also close enough for him to speed home each night in the summer to walk my sisters and me up and then down 2 steep hills for a swim in our lake before it grew dark and the mosquitoes came after us. The blood smell in my restaurant's kitchen took me back to all of that, and then it hurled me forward to Spain. Saturdays and markets all over the world bustle with energy. At Barcelona's famed La Boqueria market on a sun-drenched September morning, my wife Janet and I felt as alive and excited as we might have been if we'd been walking into Woodstock in 1969. We entered under the archway of the market and soon confronted a meat case. It was a jaw-dropper. It was called Despojos Selectos, and it was all about the offcuts of meats. A pretty young woman, no more than 22, attended the stall. She looked South American, and I asked her where she was from. Ecuador, she smiled, pointed at her chest, and said, Anna. We took in the view in the stall. It was hard to grasp the totality of it at first. Each item in this otherwise ordinary meat case held products you simply do not see in most of America. It was as if a butcher took apart whole animals, saved the familiar cuts we see in meat cases back home for some other purpose, and arranged these cuts in that cold case. They were raw, fresh, and as carnal as meat has ever looked. From there, my eye scanned eyes, still in a bony head, and huge testicles, maybe not for a cow, but by human standards, huge. Bulbous kidneys and a whole deep royal burgundy-colored liver hanging on a sharp steel hook. A sign hung over that. It read, Carne Cula. Anna smiled again and even did a half turn and pointed demurely to her own. I hid my smile. There were intestines, cheeks, and what seemed to be wide arteries that were attached to a heart. I asked a woman about them, and she pointed to various parts of her small, old body to help me understand where on each animal the parts came from. She made the animal's most typical noises to clarify the species. I asked Anna what the square block of muted red butter was in the case, knowing the answer before it exited her full lips. Sangre, she uttered, adding, blood, and smiled once more. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Oxtails. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Deborah, hello.
Hey, Ed. How are you doing?
Very good. And I know some exciting things are taking place in Miami-Dade County.
Well, I have to say, preparing for today's segment was among the greatest challenges, because in just looking at the next 9 days, not even trying to get too ambitious, just 9 days worth of activity, I found 113 events.
Wow.
Which I'm unfortunately not going to be able to chronicle for the listeners today, but I'll do my best to just give a snapshot. But at the get-go, I'm going to say definitely go check out the calendar at MiamiDadeArts.org, because I'm only going to scratch the surface, and there's just too much great stuff that you don't want to miss.
Bravo.
So beginning tonight at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, there's Kurt Elling, who is widely considered to be among the most daring, dynamic, and interesting jazz singers around. Mr. Elling's 2013 Grammy-nominated Best Jazz Shaw's album, which is titled 1619 Broadway, the Brill Building Project, is his latest album honoring New York City's historic building. And it has generated some of the greatest and most important popular songs in American music history. And that's tonight at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center in Cutler Bay. A couple of phenomenal film events coming up, including the 17th annual Miami Jewish Film Festival, which is ongoing throughout the county at O Cinema and the Shores, Regal Cinemas in South Beach, the Bill Cosford Theater at UM on Coral Gables, the Frank Theater Centro-Coastal in North Miami Beach, and Miami Beach Cinematheque. Again, just a gazillion, or at least 29 films not to be missed, and that's running through February 3rd, as I mentioned, all over the county. Tiger Tail Productions is taking on a new project titled Screen Dance Miami, which highlights Miami-based choreographers, movers, and filmmakers who are working with emerging and new concepts in regard to movement and dance on film and dance on camera. Screen Dance Miami events this weekend will take place at Incubate in the Wynwood section of Miami. So make sure to check out this wonderful new ambitious Screen Dance Miami project. This weekend, we have a couple of great concerts, of course, at the Adrian Arsht Center, featuring the Cleveland Orchestra. Their music director, Franz Welser-Must, will conduct a program tonight featuring Gil Shaham on violin, the brilliant violinist. And the program includes works by Schubert, Korngold, and Strauss, Jr. And next weekend, they'll perform again, Franz Welser-Must. That program includes works of Strauss, Debussy, and Stravinsky. And that's at the Adrian Arsht Center for the Performing Arts here in downtown Miami this weekend and next weekend with the Cleveland Orchestra. But wait, there's more. The Florida Grand Opera is presenting Giuseppe Verdi's Nabucco, which is considered by many to have actually launched Verdi's spectacular opera career. And it captures the voice of ancient Hebrews and their struggles as exiles, as Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylonia, destroys the temple and forces Hebrews from their homeland. One of the highlights of the opera is the famous chorus, Va Pensiero, and that's throughout the week at the Adrian Arsht Center for the Performing Arts, presented by Florida Grand Opera. At Miami-Dade County Auditorium over in Little Havana, Pastora Soler in concert, the Florida Chamber Orchestra is presenting a program titled Homenaje al Impresionismo. And then next Thursday and Friday, Teatro Avante is presenting A Pie del Tamesis. And that's, again, over at Miami-Dade County Auditorium in Little Havana. It is Chocolate Festival weekend at Fairchild Tropical Garden. It is the most wonderful and most decadent 3 days worth of chocolate, featuring cooking demonstrations, kids cooking demonstrations, lectures. And that's over at Fairchild Tropical Garden this weekend. Also Sunday at Gusman Concert Hall at the University of Miami, Sunday Afternoons of Music is presenting the new trio, Andrew Juan on violin, Julio Elizalde on piano, and Patrick G on cello. This program is a Russian tribute program and includes works by Rachmaninoff, Shostakovich, and Tchaikovsky. And that's just the beginning, so remember to check out theater, dance, music, and everything else at our MiamiDadeArts.org website. That's MiamiDadeArts.org. And there is, as I said, hundreds of things to do.
So much more on the website. Thank you, Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Great busy weekend for you.
Indeed. Thanks so much, Ed.
And this Sunday, January 26th at 4 p.m., the City of Miami Beach Arts in the Park will present the Miami Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Eduardo Martore, to celebrate the Bass Museum of Art's 50th anniversary. It's a free concert in Collins Park, 22nd Street between Collins and Park Avenues on Miami Beach. More info at bassmuseum.org. And the 16th annual Coral Gables Blues Fest continues through Sunday. It's a free Blues Fest, rain or shine, at Fritz and Franz Beer House, 60 Merrick Way in Coral Gables. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Judith Bishop, Christy Angelus, Paul Leary, Norman Van Aken, and Deborah Margol. Call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.